You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to gamesense.ab.ca. Again, Dean, welcome back to the show, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Well, Dean, quickly, before we, were you a Jays fan growing up? Are you a Jays fan now? Are you into baseball at all? Where's your thoughts on the Jays for the first time in over three decades going back to the World Series?
Well, I think it's a great thing. It's ignited the country as far as baseball goes and united the country. It is the only Canadian team. Growing up, I was I grew up in the prairies, so I was less into Major League Baseball and more into the baseball that I grew up around in my little town. So the senior men's team in Warren, Manitoba was of more interest to me, to be honest with you, than any Major League team. So, because my heroes were playing in those games. So, growing up in a little town, The best guys in your town end up being your heroes. So, but I think it's great for baseball. I played competitive baseball when I was a kid, and I think it's a fabulous thing that has ignited the interest, and it is something truly that I think people connect with coast to coast.
Dean, did you ever hit a game-tying, game-winning home run in your illustrious career as a kid?
No. Of the things I did in baseball, hitting big runs was not a part of it. I was not a very good hitter. I primarily played third base and pitched, and I was not very good at the plate. As a matter of fact, at our junior A dinner at the end of the year, the award I won had a bat with a hole drilled in it. So that was.
Well, maybe that's because you're such a good pitcher that no one could hit it. Maybe that's what they're suggesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't that good of a pitcher either. You know, the irony is that Les Lazarick, the wonderful voice of the Saskatoon Blades, we played against each other. He played for the Elmwood Giants, and I played for the Interlake Blazers during our provincial junior baseball days, and now we're both doing the same job, doing play-by-play.
Oh, nice. I like it. Yeah. Speaking of play-by-play, let's look at the centers. You look at their numbers. And, the defensive environment hasn't been great. They've been giving up too many chances off the rush. And then their goaltender, Kevin Woodley, we had on yesterday, says, hey, it's not a great environment for the goalie, but even he's still below expected. So it's like a double whammy. Your goalie's not playing as well as you would like, and your defensive structure definitely isn't where they want it to be early on. What's the coaching staff saying? Are these easy fixes, do you think? Is it just big blunders? What's gone wrong early for the Senators defensively?
Well, I think right off the top, it's actually a triple whammy because a big part of the bad defense has been how horribly the penalty kill is. They just got out of 32nd place, and now they're 31st in the league as far as penalty kill goes. Their penalty kill has been terrible. The goaltending has been good at times, but not enough of the time. And the goals that they have given up, the both goaltenders have given up, sometimes have been the kind that make everybody on the bench drop their shoulders. And as a team, they simply have not defended anywhere close to what they did in the last half of last year and in the playoffs. So I think for the coaching staff, you know, these are things that right now, you know, six games into the season, it's no catastrophe. But if you're 16 games into the season, you're searching for the panic button and you're going to jam it with your fist. So, you got to deal with these things. And, you know, here in town the last 2 days, they've been talking about recommitting to what the identity of this team is. And last year, the identity of this team was a physical, hardworking team that is hard to play against and that could defend well. And they have to get back to that. And there's just no easy fix to it, and there's no way around it, because this team is doing fine offensively. But as we all know, in this league, you can't score your way to the playoffs. You have to defend your way to the playoffs. And this team right now, and it's very early, but this team right now is not playing the kind of hockey, anywhere close to the kind of hockey you need to play to be a playoff team.
The one guy who is Shane Pinto. 7 goals, leads the league in even strength goals with 7. And, you know, like, it's an unreal start for him. What have you liked from Pinto's game?
Just the all-around game. You know, he's been great in the face-off circle. He has been great defensively. Ironically enough, last year on this team, he was the third-line center, and him and Ridley Gregg and Mike Amadio were probably, well, they weren't probably, they absolutely were in the last half of the season and certainly in the playoffs, this team's shutdown line. He played against all the best lines of the other team. You know, that's what that he and that line did, and they were fantastic. And, you know, I think part of it is, you know, he's bigger and he's stronger this year because he's getting to that age now where he's getting his man strength. You know, that line you go past, the players go past, when it's not just about how much can you lift in the weight room. You kind of get that thick, heavy you know, man strength. It's kind of like the, you know, the 18-year-old kid that can bench press 350. You know, his old man's 45 years old and his old man has never been on a bench, but still the old man could bend him in two. You know, it's the old man. It's a man strength. And I think Pinto is walking into that part of his career now where he's got that. He's very hard to push off the puck. He's just physically a different kind of player. And the other thing is he's motivated. He knows that there's another contract coming for him in the next little while. And they're already talking about, you know, extending his contract. So there's that financial side to it. So there's a bunch of motivators, and he's getting opportunities and he's taking great advantage of them.
Dean Brown joins us. Yeah, he is being good. The Brady Tkachuk loss is massive for a lot of reasons. Offensively, he's very good for their team. He's an emotional leader. He's a physical leader for this group. I know it's only been early, but now their offense really hasn't taken a big dip yet, so that part's good. But where do you think they miss Tkachuk the most?
And the personality of the team. You know, when DJ Smith was a coach of this team, he always used to say that, you know, Brady drags guys into battle. You know, if guys just want to go out and have a game where they skate through the game and just, you know, put in time and try and win the game, but if you don't, oh shucks. Brady is the kind of guy that makes everybody accountable, and you have to, you know, it's the old dog sled routine. You know, the pace of the lead dog is the pace of the pack, and that's what Brady is. And you know, Tim Stützle is the most skilled player on this team, but Brady Tkachuk easily is the most important player on this team. You know, on some teams, you know, the captain of the team is the highest draft pick or the guy who's the best player, whether he's a good leader or not. And many times, you know, there's a marketing component to selecting the captain. In Ottawa's case, Brady Tkachuk is absolutely the captain and the leader of this team. The designation matches the role model and the personality. And when you don't have that guy, you're a different team. And the thing that I think is difficult mentally for the players on this team is they know how long they're going to be without him. It could be as much as 2 months, maybe even a little bit more. And so it's not just that you're missing him. You know, if you have an injury and they say it's going to be this much time, but it could be a bit earlier, and you're talking weeks, you know, I think it's a different mindset. When you know that, you know, the most important guy on your team is gone for 2 months, no matter what, that, you know, I think that messes with guys' minds a little bit. And there's no question how important he is to this team in the things he does on the ice and the things he inspires his teammates to do on a nightly basis.
Dean Brown joins us. Oilers in Ottawa to take on the Senators tonight. Jake Walman will make his season debut. Adam Henrique, funny little stat, he'll be the first ever player to play his career 1,000th game in an Oilers uniform. Now, Kevin Lowe did play 1,000 games for the Oilers, but he had left and then he returned later to play over 1,000. But his actual 1,000th game did not come in an Oilers uniform. But Adam Henrique, first one ever to play his 1,000th game in the NHL tonight. They had special shirts made for him. He's from Ontario. He's got a lot of family members coming in, so that part will be exciting for them. The Sens defensively, Spence, it looks like, Dean, not going to play tonight. How has he performed since coming over from L.A.?
He's been okay. He's been when he's been in, he's done some good things that are, you know, that people like, that the coaches like. And there's, well, in the last game, he coughed up the puck that ended up being the game-winning goal. So coaches like that less. But, you know, in the case of Ottawa, they're in a situation right now with their 6D where the coach has the luxury of being able to select the options, in that the two guys that are that sixth defenseman or would be that sixth defenseman are two very different players. Spence is a lot smaller, but a far better skater and puck handler. And Nicholas Mattanpalo is far larger and more of a stay-at-home, plant, and be physical kind of defenseman. And so it's given Travis Green the opportunity when they're playing a team that is more, you know, speed, smaller forward, technical, you know, quick kind of game. He's opted for the Spence option. When they're playing bigger, more physical teams, like he played against, you know, Tampa and he played against Florida, then Mattanpalo goes in. So teams with bigger forwards and more likely to play a bit more of a physical game, Mattanpalo is often the option. But it gives the coach, for the first time for this coach, actually, it gives them a distinct difference in his choices about who he dresses for that final defensive spot.
What about the matchups? Is it automatically Sanderson that's going to get the McDavid Drysdale at 5-on-5 tonight? Is that what you'd expect?
Oh, yeah. I don't see there been any question about that. And there's no question that Sanderson is the only guy that can skate with McDavid. If anybody can skate with him, it would be Sanderson. And I don't know in a flat-out race if Sanderson could beat him. But they're in the same time zone, whereas so many people in this league aren't in, you know, McDavid's time zone. He's, yeah, you know, he's a different guy. So Jake can skate well enough that he can shut down some kind of gap. But in this league, the reality is that no one can shut down gap if he gets ahead of steam. So, you know, Sanderson is going to be dependent. His ability to have any kind of impact on McDavid is going to have direct links to how successful Ottawa is in slowing McDavid down before he gets to his blue line, because you've seen it a billion times. If he's at full speed by the time he hits his blue line, there is no one in this league that can contain that speed. So Sanderson will be the designated guy, but he's going to need help just like every other defenseman in the league. I don't think there is a defenseman that can take him on by himself. You need a forward to slow him down. You need a centerman to be able to box and contain him a little bit to keep him in, you know, normal human speed. Because if he gets that step and he gets to full speed by his own blue line, you're just rolling the dice.
Yeah. No. Well, the thing is that the orders right now, they're big guns by their standards have been rather pedestrian, to be honest. Leon, and I know Leon Draisaitl has four goals, but even Leon says, man, like I'm struggling to find it. I'm struggling to feel it. McDavid doesn't have a goal yet and continually is in the slot and is passing up shots. I'm not sure why, but obviously there's some lack of confidence there. And so, you know, Ottawa's a team that struggled defensively. Edmonton's a team that struggled offensively. And we'll kind of see what gives tonight, Dean. Which one can, you know, get that part of their game going? Can Edmonton's offense wake up or can Ottawa's defense wake up? And probably whichever one does is going to win the game.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know. But I know in Ottawa, amongst the fans, some of them are looking at saying, wow, they've lost three straight games. You know, they're in a slump. But most people are saying, oh, my God, the Oilers are due. You don't want to be the team that plays them when they're due. And, you know, Ottawa's that team tonight. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, it's a game that somebody's going to, both these teams walk in with various levels of funk going on in their game, and somebody's going to edge their way out of their funk. It won't be completely, neither team will completely solve their funk tonight, but someone's going to take a big step out of the ditch, and I just don't know who.
It's very well said. Dino, always great to talk to you, man. I appreciate it. Enjoy the call tonight.
Anytime, my friend.